Welcome to Tango TV, everyone. This is Tango, and today, me and Alfonso will be interviewing our guest.
Matthew Tropiano.
Woo! Yes, also known
otherwise
as...
known as Mr.
Yep,
T.
Mr. T.
Yeah, I don't post very often, though.
Uh-huh.
Or I don't release anything very often, though, anyway.
Well, it's also confusing. I think there's another Mr. T on Doomworld as well.
There is a Mr. T, and I guess it gets confusing, but I don't know. Everyone, I think at this point, knows it's me, Mr. Tropiano.
I think even the other Mr. T lamented at some point that that was a name that was used quite often once.
Yeah.
So you guys are just remnants of a bygone era.
Yeah, he's the famous actor.
Character thing. Okay.
Okay. Anyway, onwards.
So, Mr. T, I guess some won't work. Certainly by playing it, not necessarily by name. But others will not know that you're also programming. You dabbled in programming. And specifically, you did... What was that thing you set up for Ed Games? Did you the whole... I'm not a programmer, so you're going to have to talk me through that. But
there's a we have the ID Games archive,
yeah,
Doomworld, and I remember talking to a Bloodshedder a while ago about actually extending it so that like other programs can maybe like interface with it, like kind of like the program sends like a request and it gets back information like XML or whatever, and then it just presents that in a different way, and you could write programs that would like, you know, search ID Games or download stuff from ID Games. So and the reason why I contacted him about that was because I was writing my own like Doom front end, and I was like, you know, it'd be a really cool addition if you could just like search and download stuff immediately to, you know, to the computer or whatever, and then have it like play either automatically or like just, you know, maintain a collection of what you have.
Mm-hmm.
So and that was like a couple years ago, but then I guess interest was generated in it again, and then we decided to actually do something this time around, and I wrote some code that'll actually do just that, so you can like any programmer who knows how to send HTTP requests and get them back can write a program that interfaces with it.
So that's
like any other type of thing like that.
So that's what you're working on now. So that's current, something that should happen in the near future.
I mean, it's happened. The API is up. I just need to maybe iron out a few bugs, but it's perfectly usable. I think, other than me, some people have actually written a program or two with using it. One of which is, I think, Excel, Dennis Mukesson.
Yep.
That's his name. He wrote the like a little Android app that interfaces with it, and it's really, really cool. Like I was showing it to friends, and I was like, hey, look at this! Like someone's actually using something I wrote. It's great. And then they're like, you wrote an Android app? I'm like, well, no, I didn't write the app. I wrote the thing that gives you the information for the app. And so it's like, I don't know. It's very cool watching, you know, stuff that you made actually be useful to another person.
Right.
And I think other people are starting to write things using it. But, it's a slow process. I really need to write, like, maybe a news entry about it so that more people would know that it exists.
Right,
but, like, right now, I guess it's...
I hadn't heard of it, of course.
Yeah. Not many people do know about it. I tend not to promote, especially since like I try to get everything as perfect as possible, and and I don't want to, like, if I announce something, I don't want to get hopes up. Although I don't think anybody really does get their hopes up.
You're too
like
modest.
Doom related stuff.
Yeah, Doomworld has a whole host of programmers. Really, it's sort of like a hub. Some of those guys. So I thought, yeah, it was just maybe worth setting aside a few moments just to discuss that. And, yeah. And I did read at the forums. I think it's actually on the last post at the on our thread at the moment that Caesar mentions that you did help him out with writing new texture allocation or something or other. You can tell I'm a complete novice at this sort of stuff for hacks. I'm just wondering how far it extends. How much programming have you your fingers are sort of influenced?
Well, I mean, not very much at the moment. Like, I mean, back in 2005, I wrote like a little library for Doom and the data structures in Doom, like for maps and other sorts of lumps, graphics and whatnot. And I wrote that for Java, but that was back in 2005, and it sucked a lot because I was still learning. I was still like in college, and I was still learning the ins and outs of like writing, say, a good API or application programming interface. For those who don't know the acronym,
thanks.
Or libraries and stuff like that. So, I mean, I wrote that, and then it got a little bit of criticism because, like, you know, it was still pretty early in my, I guess, programming career. But later on, around, say, 2010, 2009, I wrote something, like, better. And you could, like, it's a heck of a lot better than what the old library was. Sometimes I don't even acknowledge that old library exists, but it's a lot better. The Doomstruct library, and I released it on my I don't know, I have like a little, I guess, fledgling company, though it's not really hasn't really done anything of worth as of yet. It's just me and blackrooksoftware.com, and that's I put that there because it uses a lot of other common libraries that I wrote. So, and that's what, you know, anything Doom related that I write uses those libraries because, hey, I did a lot of work there. So, for reading Doom related structures. And the thing I did for Zazer, sorry to,
yeah, no,
got to work my way back. The thing I did for Zazer was, he needed a program to do, texture replacement because, I guess, when he pulled together a bunch of, resources, they were all named a certain way when the Hacks 2.0 project started a while back, and now he has a new organizational way of setting up all those resources and textures and flats and whatever. And he just needed a little program to he could just give a list of replacements and it would replace it for him. And apparently it worked out pretty well.
Nice.
I didn't know what a map format he was using, so when I wrote it, I wrote it through the method of it would auto-detect the map format, so it would like load the whole map in memory and then do the replace and then save it back. But there's a bug in it in which it kind of ruins the block map, it's the part says how collision detection works in Doom. So it so I said, just rebuild the nodes, it'll be fine.
But
it was only slightly buggy, but it works.
So if I'm understanding correctly, he used it to go back into previous maps that were already textured and then retexture them with the new texture names. Is that what's going on?
Well, yeah. It would just replace texture names. Flats and textures.
Okay.
So he just fed it a list and it said, "Oh, okay. Well, these are the new names. Okay, so I'll just go through and replace everything. Done."
This seems like something that we should have had before this. I'm surprised it's taken us that long to get something like that. But that's awesome.
Well, I mean, I'm all, and the thing is, I haven't really, I guess, written too much. Like, I want to get back into the doing stuff for the community. So, like, if anybody needs any kind of like utilities being written. Like just small things like that or whatever, I would be very happy to oblige. Like I like to do things that'll help others.
Well, okay. I know I've had several times where someone writing something, a little utility like that would really help just for little things like texture renaming, things like that. So it's definitely good to know.
Yeah, I would really like to input more on this front, but the extent of my programming knowledge doesn't even get past the starting block. So. it's if you wanted to learn about programming
it
wouldn't be a bad place to start. Would I be wrong in saying that? I don't know. It seems like a lot of people to ask. And
Well, what would be a good place to start if you wanted to learn programming in general?
Yeah, well, I don't know how complicated it gets.
As far as languages are concerned, I would maybe suggest this is like you know every this this could get a lot of criticism and stuff because you know, programmers are a very touchy lot. I would recommend probably like Python or something because it's like a you know it's you could do a lot of stuff with it and it teaches you maybe proper structure, proper program structure and stuff like that. But I wouldn't start with anything like C, C++, or Java because it requires probably a little bit of a previous knowledge on how programming works or in Java or C++'s case, object-oriented programming works. But if you want to know how programs maybe work or what programming is all about, like, Python, I guess, is good enough for that cool. in that respect.
Keeping that in mind.
As far as like, you should like start with Python, but like maybe work into like other, dare I say, practical languages. Like the languages, if you're like gung ho about wanting to maybe have it be a job at some point, Java and C# are big. They're very similar. They're as always, C is very good later on. So that like the closer you get to the machine, like with C or assembly programming, the harder it is. But you should always start with a decent abstraction like Python. At least that's my opinion.
Okay. This might be a good opportunity to make a bit of a segue. Well, a very messy segue. There's only not so much similarity you can get between doom mapping and programming, I guess. But,
well, I mean, it's all data.
That's true enough. How did you discover doom mapping? Is it possible it's linked in any way to your love of programming, or is that just a...
Actually, it kind of is. Like when, it kind of is because like when I was a kid, I programmed in when I was learning to program. I had like this old 286, and I had like BASIC on it, and it had like a VGA video card in it, so I could do 256 colors, and I played a lot of Wolfenstein. And Wolfenstein was really really fun, and you know I was very familiar with what id Software did with Commander Keen and all that other stuff. It like ran on that computer wonderfully. Wolfenstein was a little slow because it was high fidelity graphics. from that I couldn't make my own maps. But what I remember doing was I got like graph paper or whatever. And I started like making my own Wolfenstein map, because I always love to create in that way. I remember mailing them or sending them to Apogee or something. I was like, hey, could you make a game out of this kind of? But they sent me back like a catalog. there was a response.
Well, that's
but it
nice.
Wasn't
of them.
The response I was hoping for. Yeah, but it was like they handwrote my address on it. Like they didn't just send me a package or whatever.
It wasn't automated. That's cool.
It wasn't purely automated. But
maybe that's just because they didn't have the technology at the time to completely automate it.
Maybe. But this was back in 1992? Maybe.
Okay. Something like that.
Wow. Oh my god, I'm so
old. I should
know
that date, shouldn't I? I should. Sitting in the chair.
So anyways, the next step from Wolfenstein was Doom, but I didn't have a computer to play Doom with, so I had to rely on friends, and they had like 486s and stuff or whatever at the time. Eventually, I got like a Pentium 100 Compaq Presario, and as soon as I got that, I'm like, I have to install Doom, I have to play it. So I got the discs, all of the floppy diskettes, and I installed the first episode. And I probably played through that thing like the entire way. And I was like, this is so fun. I wonder if there's something out there in which I can make, Doom maps, but I didn't have internet. So I couldn't, and the internet was still in its kind of, you know, the World Wide Web was still in its infancy. So there really wasn't too much in the line of, like, actually looking for that stuff, other than, like, BBSs and stuff, but I didn't have, like, a separate modem line at the time. But when I did, I got on the internet. Mm-hmm. But that was much, a little bit later in my Doom career. Like, when I released anything early, it was through a friend that had an internet connection. And that was to AOL's file servers. So it was... Yeah, American Online's a file server.
Good old days.
The good old days. But I did get my hand on some utilities and stuff because I found this huge book called The Doom Hacker's Guide. And I forget who wrote that. I think I have it somewhere, but I don't know where the heck it is. It came with a CD. And that had a couple of well-known maps at the time, like There's No Place Like Home and the Ledges series, which were a series of deathmatch maps that I guess have been around Duango and all that other stuff.
Right.
And they had a couple of editing programs, like shareware editing programs on there. Like I think it was like DoomEd, there was DoomCAD, and very, very old programs. And I... I'd start sketching out maps and whatever, and then I'd try to make them in the editors, but it was so terrible because some of these, it's not like Doom Builder. Doom Builder's great.
Yeah, I don't think we can appreciate what we have here.
Oh my God. Like, I finally sent an email to like Pascal a while ago, Codem, Pascal von der Heiden, and I was like, I gotta tell you, this is the greatest thing. Like, this, thank you very much for making this. And he's like, hey, no problem. took me so long to actually thank him, but way back when you had like these editors that were very like sector based, like you'd have to draw a box and then manipulate vertices and split lines and whatever. Mm-hmm. But
did
I was never
did that not put you off at all. Mm-hmm. I mean, being thrown in the deep end like that, or did you just sort of fight your way through it?
The nice thing about that was that you had like a giant book of knowledge at my disposal for like what dummy sectors were and what how to create staircases and whatever. So it was like kind of like a tutorial, because I think DEU was also on the disc, but I didn't like the what is it called, the Doom editing utility, DEU, like that really old editor that I guess Deep was kind of based off of when that came out later.
Right.
So or Death, I guess, is the other one. So, I mean, yeah, they had DEU on there, and they had, like, tutorials in the book, this big, giant, thick paperback book. And I started learning bit by bit how to make a map. And, of course, my early maps were terrible, terrible, horrible, bad maps filled with, like, probably a cyber demon, a BFG, a megasphere, and a bunch of Hank mannequins everywhere.
Wow. That sounds familiar.
I'm really fascinated by the process, because obviously people these days, you know, new guys come to the community, they can pick it up like that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, because now there's tons of information at their disposal, and we have so many better editors.
Yeah, I think the editor really makes a big difference.
Oh my God, does it! Like when I made my early maps, it was actually in Deep. Because before it became Deep Sea and a giant mess. But sorry, creator of Deep Sea, but come on, man.
Shots fired.
I still have to pay for that shit now.
But Deep was okay, but I didn't get the registered version, so I was limited in what I could make. Like I was limited to 800 line depths and 1,200 sides. 1,200 side depths.
That's awful.
And that's the when I made a lot of my decent early maps, like decent like playable early maps, I had the shareware version of Deep to make those. And that's what I used to make one of my early memorable things, like Dimensions of Time. And before that, it was like this Heretic episode that I made. I don't know, it's on my website, mtrope.net, mtrope.net.
Oh. Did you never have the courage to upload that to Mid Games?
The heretic map and the best WoD ever, which is basically a three episode replacement for Doom.
And here I was just beginning to think you were quite a modest guy.
maybe he is now. So he's changed.
Yeah.
I was 12, man.
It's probably in block capitals and everything. Yeah.
Well, it had a exclamation point at the end and a really, really badly drawn title screen. And I used MS Paint to do it. And since I guess they're, I didn't know how bitmaps worked and how certain programs would turn that into Doom. I guess graphics, the colors are really bad. I mean, same thing with Dimensions of Time with the status bar. The colors are bad, and I was like, I have no idea how these things work. So anyways, like, but the Heretic episode and that the best WoD ever, which I made with my friend at the time, Bill Nichols. He we collaborated on a lot of things. He doesn't do so much editing anymore since he's, you know, married now, has kids, but back then we kind of collaborated a lot, and that was one of our first released products, and we uploaded that to AOL, but we didn't upload it to CDROM.com, I guess was the place to upload things at the time. But I did upload, I guess, Dimensions of Time way back when, I guess June 1998, if the date is correct. And I was probably just finishing middle school at that time.
Damn.
Oh. So you mentioned Heretic, and now this is jumping forward, well, basically over a decade, to Hex and Scourge of Vistas, which I think I've played. But I just wanted to ask, I mean, because you ended up making a WoD for Hex, and what inspired you to do that? I mean,
That was when Scourge was when I was getting back into Doom editing around where I was in the middle of college. I guess it was around my sophomore year, probably. Of college. Well,
That's an American term. Sorry, I don't. That's for second year, isn't it?
Second year. Good. Sorry, keep forgetting that year. Using the British year system. Uh-huh. So that's the second year of college. Before that, I was concentrating on maybe programming and stuff because I was become a computer science major. So I was doing that, but I had all the free time in the world. So the thing that got me back into editing, because since I was not led astray, but I strayed from Doom after I guess Dimensions of Time or whatever, and I started making stuff for Quake 2, Quake 3, which you could also find on my website. They're okay, they're not really that great, and then I go back to Doom when the return resources were made, and I made two maps that I do not ever promote ever, and because they're horrible junk. And then I was like, that's it, maybe I'm done with Doom editing, because I also made stuff for a lot of other games that I've kind of lost at the moment, but nothing I really released or uploaded anywhere. But so I kind of took a break, and then Scourge was when I was getting back into it. And the thing that got me back into editing for Doom was something that Saib made, Mike Watson. He made Void. And Void was like, wait a minute, the
source port,
we can do this. We can, the ZDoom can now incorporate things from Hexen and Heretic. This is, oh my God. Like, and it kind of was like a big thing. Like I used Void kind of like as a proof of concept that you could still make cool things with Doom. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, oh, what have I been missing? So I looked around for like maybe I don't know if Doom Builder was around yet, but I got like WoD Author, and that worked on my computer, and I started building maps I guess for Hexen for that, because my roommate played Hexen a lot. Like he was more into like the role playing type of deals or like action RPGs, and not so much like just straight up
shooting
things. Yeah, but Hexen was like, you know, it was like Doom. It was like a medieval Doom, but it like, you know, required you to solve maybe some rudimentary puzzles and whatever. But so I like started making Hexen maps, and I'm like, because I said, hey, I can make Hexen maps. He's like, really? I'm like, absolutely. So So I started making that, and then I got it to like an almost finished point, but I guess I shelved it because I was working on some maps for Community Chest 3, because like I think Linguica was the person, Andrew Stein. He was the person who said that, oh, there's this project that is on Doomworld. Maybe if you're looking for a way to contribute, contribute to this mm-hmm. project. So I joined up and made three maps for Community Chest 3. So like Scourge was put on a shelf, and later down the line, after I guess it was after Community Chest 3, and then. Ooh, I guess there is a kind of a gap there. But it wasn't until I got, like, I quit my first job that I was just like, I have all the time in the world. Maybe I should actually finish this. Maybe I should actually finish the Scourge. And then I'm like, hey, guys, this is what I have so far. What do you think? And I get feedback. And then they're like, we're not digging the weird archvile enemy you put in here. And I'm like, oh, okay. So maybe I should make something new. And then I completely change things around so that you fight, you know, the disciples of Viserys, which, like, they embody, like, you know, physics and fire and death and whatever. So, like, I guess the point I want to make with that is it's really, really good to get criticism on basically anything you make. Like, if you care about anything that you create and you want it to be good, you really, really, really should get, like, outside views or whatever on it. Because, you know, when you make it, you are in this little bubble. And if you're not really your harshest critic, which I am, though, but if you don't know how to criticize your work, of course, anything that you make is going to be absolutely wonderful and perfect. But, like, you know, you got to throw it at reality,
right?
So that you get what other people think,
right?
And
push those boundaries.
Yeah, and if you don't get that feedback, it can never really be, like, you know, good. And, like, if you make something and it's only good for yourself, that's good if that was your goal. But if you want to actually release something that other people can play, you've got to get their opinion in some way before you actually say, okay, this is done, this is perfect, I'm releasing
it. I think
you do give me the...
Go ahead.
Go ahead, Tango. Okay. You do actually give me the impression of someone who really enjoys mapping for the sake of mapping. Because I guess you must have realized when you're making a map set for Hexen that it probably wouldn't get all that much.
Oh my god, yeah! Like Hexen and Heretic are kind of like, I guess, black sheep of the Doom Engine game. Well, not as much as Strife. Not as much as Strife is, because, like, even though that game is, like, I guess it's abandonware, so it's pretty much freely available wherever you could find it. But it's still, like, kind of out of the way, and come on, the place is called Doomworld. Everybody's played Doom. Not everybody's played Heretic or Hexen, but everybody who could ever call themselves a gamer of some kind has played Doom.
Everybody and their goldfish.
everything and their goldfish. They taught their goldfish how to play Doom.
I suspect there might be a resurgence in Strife, though, at the moment. I mean, or at least I certainly hope there will be. Absolute Order, and then I think I'm hearing in the woodworks somewhere going on. I can't remember who it was who announced they were.
Which one is
behind bars? But
who did Absolute Order? You said
that was Chorus.
Yeah,
that's
really the only person I know that's been working on Strife, but I don't really.
He's the Strife right. spokesman, I think.
Yeah, at the moment. But word of advice for anybody who wants to, I guess, take on a project for Strife, it's probably going to be a lot more involved, because, you know, there's going to be, like, unless it's just all out shooting those guys and whatever, and if you want to, like, you know, throw a story in there, it's probably a lot more involved, because you're talking
to people.
It's going
to be a whole different
process. And not only that, if you have a lot of people on your project, you better have a decent coordinator. Because you know what really kind of ticks me off about a lot of projects? Like, you have, like, I kind of have to be careful how to word this so I don't like off a lot. But like, if you're going to start a project, there has to be some kind of not strict direction, but direction of some kind. Like, you have to have an idea of what your finished product would want to look like. And excuse me. Sorry, I'm getting over a cold.
You're excused. I guess we could. I guess maybe next time we'll have the Green Herring on if he obliges my request. He could agree with you, I guess, on that front, or speak on that issue, as I know he's been quite frustrated with the community chess 4 and how that sort of plodded along for about 3 years or more. So
the first obstacle is like getting people that want to work on the project and then like will actually put the effort in and whatever. But it's really hard because like a lot of everybody these days has their own lives and whatever. And Doom's a hobby. It's not a life. It really can't be unless you're one of those lucky few that got on those companies that have actually made that additional episode for Doom for like Xbox Live Arcade or whatever. But if you're going to actually create a project, there has to be some kind of direction, or else it's just going to be like that was my main frustration with Community Chess 3, because like although Andy did a pretty good job of like keeping everything together or kind of organized and who was doing what, there really had to be like maybe. I think it would be a better product, I guess, in the end. And, it would be a better product in the end if we were like, okay, these first couple of maps have to be, like, maybe this theme, and then it would kind of move into this theme and whatever. Like, there has to be a flow, you know? Mm-hmm. And there has to be maybe a difficulty flow or whatever. But, like, since it's a community project, then it's, like, kind of like an anything goes. But then you look at Community Chess 4, and a lot of the maps are very different, and Looping's Castman's maps are huge, although that's like kind of his style, though, so you can't really be blamed too much for that, but there's no
cohesion
team. It's like all over the place, and then in the end, the guy who has to put the whole thing together is like, oh my god, all these resources, although I think they made a resource wad to begin with, so that's kind of a I wasn't involved in Community Chess 4 at all. I hear they made like a resource pool kind of. So that
resources were there from the very beginning, I think. Yeah, the resources were there from the beginning, as far as I know. So that would have definitely helped.
Yeah. I had this idea to maybe start like a Hexen community project, but then I was like, this has to be really tightly directed because Hexen's about hubs, and if you have to divide it up by maps, you're going to have to designate, okay, in this map, you're going to have to include this object and this object, and you have to also make it so that if this script runs, this happens, and this is not accessible until this happens. Like, you'd have to give them, you have to also provide vague instructions so that like, you have a cohesive like set of hubs and whatever. That was like an idea I was kicking around, but I'm like, wow, I'd have to devote some time before that to actually get something like that off the ground.
Yeah, and then it's not at all like Doom in that all the maps are disconnected out of one into the next, and then everyone has to be on the same page. I'd be amazed if you could pull that off.
No, Doom really.
No, go ahead.
Sorry, I mean, I guess.
Tango, here. Oh my god.
I guess Doom kind of affords you that luxury that everything is kind of discrete and separated or whatever, and the maps don't have to flow together, but it is a lot nicer if like the themes flow together and whatever.
Mm-hmm. I always thought really that was the that was not the the appeal of the community chess problem, that it was literally just
it was like a hodgepodge
random,
yeah. It was a veritable potpourri of styles and themes and
very impressive. Yeah, but so you think even? I mean, I'm thinking of. I know it was brought up in an interview with Jimmy that we didn't discuss it in this light. Requiem, for example, was a community project with probably as many hands. But to me, that feels like it has a lot more cohesion So you think community projects like that should be structured in that sort of way?
I mean, anything can benefit. A lot of things benefit from some structure, especially the projects that require some kind of organization. But I want to say that Requiem kind of had, like, the people in charge of Requiem kind of had like an idea of what they wanted the project to look like, and like as if and when you look back, even though there was like different maps and different styles or whatever between like a lot of different mappers at the time, they still had kind of a theme running through it.
Right.
It was a very like gothic kind of dark theme to the whole thing. And as long as you like, you know, convey that you want this sort of look or this sort of theme or whatever, you'd have like a better, I guess. It looks like a more cohesive product
right.
in the end.
It seems to me as though around that time people were almost formally recruited for the project, and these days they sort of just drop in and say, "I'd like to do one." Then yes, you can, and then they might disappear, not post again for ages, and then come up with something.
Yeah.
And then it's clear they haven't been, you know, really keeping tabs on what everyone else has been doing.
That's
okay, well, apparently.
Your methods of communication were what, email and BBS, maybe?
Right, like, which makes it more impressive.
Or Usenet?
Yeah.
Do you think maybe the time period would have something to do with how Megawad comes together and how cohesive it is? Because, perhaps I'm full of shit, but I would think that that back then, just because people's mapping experience hadn't expanded as much, and because engines were more limited in their capabilities, it wasn't as possible to have so many different styles, as opposed to something like today. You know, if it's 2012 and you're making Community Chest 4, you could have so many different things because of all the different texture resources.
There's a lack of limits.
So I think maybe that could have a big impact on cohesion as far as Megawads go.
Yeah.
Oh, definitely. I mean, like, well, you look at Plutonia Revisited, which I also contributed to. That was, we were like, okay, we used Plutonia as a base, but we were limited still. Like, it had to be a set of vanilla maps. It had to be like it had to run under Chocolate Doom without issue. So, I find that limits help you grow as, you know, an artist, mapper, whatever you do. Because, like, I mean, there's a science involved and there's a bit of an art involved. And the art is, like, the process and the tools that you have at your disposal and what you can make with those tools. So, in this case, you have basically as close to vanilla Doom as you can get. You had a set of resources and some extra ones that were on top of Plutonia's resources. And you had like the direction from, who put together the project? This is slipping from my mind. Was it? It might have. No. Hang on a second.
For Plutonia Revisited?
I got to look this up.
It was Joshi, maybe. I don't know. I wasn't involved, so you know better than I do.
Yeah, it was. It was. It was Joshi. It was Josh Seeley. Yeah, who is an amazing mapper, by the way. I really liked his. Well, I mean, like it wasn't a lack of direction, but it was. He had like ground rules. Like it had to work for Vanilla Doom, and it had to be Plutonia-y. Like it had to have like those characteristics for Plutonia, like non-linearity was good, and it just had to kind of like have that style, like not just in textures but in how maps were laid out and whatever, but try to ease off the slaughter mapness of some of Plutonia's maps. I think Dario and Milo Casali were like really really good in that regard. Like they knew how to make things fun, and you didn't need like, you know, a lot of bells and whistles. You just needed.
They seemed a bit ahead of their time, if you ask me.
Yeah, I don't know if I should say this, but like the kind of the proof is, did anybody from Did anybody that worked on TNT get hired into other things? I know that Dario works for Valve at the moment.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's right, doesn't he?
Yeah.
I suppose that the job was made pretty simple for Joshy in one respect. That he wouldn't need to do much shepherding since Plutonia is already unique enough in style and it already had two authors to begin with. And I suppose maybe some people coming off the back of Plutonia 2. I don't know how long before Revisited that kicked off. Or concluded, because I know it kicked off quite a while ago.
The other thing about Revisited and that was like how successful that was that I think Josh only gave us like 6 or 7 months, because like the original Plutonia was made in about six months, and he said like,
"I was doing it like that."
If you're on this project, you have to stick with that. You have to. This is going to be probably done-ish by this point, and if you're making something, it's got to be done by then. So, so you'd attract people that had the time and could put in the time, because like with some of the community chess projects, like 3 or 4 would take years. I don't know how to put the words together to describe that, but I mean you have to care, people.
Right.
And I know I'm guilty of that as well, since I put off my own projects and stuff like that. But for a community effort, you have to be mindful that there's a lot of other hands here other than your own. And even though the community is going to be very patient, because deep down we know that we're like kind of like not a dying breed, but like we're still like kind of
very scarce
in like a lot of other
vintage gaming community.
Yeah, like we're very niche, and it's like you don't want to drive away the people we already have in the community and stuff. Although we do have like our splinter groups, we have our speed map, we have our speed runners, we have our death matchers, we have our like really hardcore death matchers. Like they have Elite, and
we even have guys who stick to fanfics like Shakers. Maybe he's in charge of his own sort of territory just about. So
And then like sometimes we like we're split up by a source court too, like the Z-Doom forums are like their own community. Like there isn't too much crossover between Doom World and Z-Doom.
This is all very uplifting.
but we're all part of a greater community. We love Doom, we love the engines, and we love doing this. And it's just another way to connect with people in a way. We're as creators, as people that want to entertain. And if your goal is to entertain, then you should care about the entertaining part.
As you do. To keep up the tradition, a coincidental tradition actually, of mentioning back to Set and X in these interviews, I think I've come up every time. Am I right in thinking that you've made a map for that?
I have made one map for Back to Saturn X.
For the second episode, isn't it?
I think. Yes.
Correct. It's bricky, very bricky, green bricky. I'm just trying to recollect because I've skimmed through them all. Yeah. I think at one point, but
I gotta be honest. I really don't like the base texture set. Oh. No. I mean, I don't like base themed. Sorry, I should rephrase. I don't like base themed maps. Okay. I find they kind of force me into a rigidity that I'm not comfortable with. Mm. It has to look buildings and stuff and square things and whatever. And I'm trying to move away from that because a lot of my maps tended to be geometric, but I'm like I have to try to. I'm trying to move more towards natural stuff, and I'm like, I liked. Oh, there was like a gothic like set inside of Essel's Essel Fortium's My Command Cuco's resource set. So I'm like, oh, maybe I should make use of that because like a lot of people are doing base themed maps. And I'm like, try to do something a little different, but I didn't know how they would like all fit together. So at the beginning and at the end, I have like little base like. Features, so it's like, oh, maybe this is like you took an elevator down to like the planet, and they have to go through the planet and get to another base or something like that. So I was like, I had to keep some kind of base element in there to just make sure things kind of fit. So I kind of regret only making one map for Back to Saturn X. At the time I was kind of involved in a lot of real life stuff and personal projects or whatever, and I was still kind of also working on bits and pieces of Coffee Break at the time. So which is, you know, I guess my latest contribution, right, or release. I really should have.
Did you want to explore the sort of making a more organic style map, I guess? Since the episode 3 was touched on last, most of all, and still being compiled, I think, at the moment. So, yeah, there was could have been an opportunity to get in there. I know Tarnsman, I think, who jumped on pretty late. I think he's managed to cobble together a few organic ones, to my knowledge, so, and they're looking pretty good. It seems to me that there seems to be some real similarity, or if not that, agreement in style between most of the mappers mapping for that project, whom the texture set really benefits, and that's why they're all sort of tech-based. Although I do recall Ezel sort of just left. Excellent quality.
Really good. There are really maps in there, and especially with what people can do with vanilla constraints. I mean, there has to be like some kind of variety. Like there has to be like maybe a theme quota for like a bunch of projects. Like you can't have too many base maps. We already have a lot of base
which
maps.
Happened.
Don't want to oversaturate the senses with computer screens and tech lighting and stuff like that. I made one map, and it was great to get, you know, almost immediate feedback, as I'm like, hey, here's a map, and then they're like, okay, fix this, maybe something misaligned here, do you really think you should put a demon there, why not something else, I mean, stuff like that. And I really like that, like, because if you have, you need like, you know, a lot of heads knocking together, and in the end you get something a lot more
polished. On that.
So I just
on that team, it is very easy to get feedback on any aspect of the map that you could possibly want feedback. There's Hawkwind, who's very good at giving feedback about the technical details.
He's a robot. Machine, man.
A friendly machine. Yeah.
He's like really, really good at giving like not just like technical feedback, but like you know, just map information. There was another person that I really like as a play tester, because he's a speed runner, so he kind of has
better notices things that other people don't, I guess.
Yeah, like he Hawkwind seems to be like way more technical. Do is a very kind of, I guess, gameplay oriented, being a speedrunner, very flow oriented. Like things, your player should move from place to place pretty easily. You know, even though my only criticism of speedrunning is that like it shouldn't be at the forefront when you're creating a map. It's like speedrunning kind of is like emergent gameplay. It's like see how fast you can complete this thing that exists. But it's still really, really good to get input on that in that way for flow. And like, it's like, what do we really have to backtrack all this way? Is there a quicker way? I'm like, oh, you know, I guess there should be a easier way to get to this other area, and so on and so forth. So that input's always valuable. Then there's like with Plutonia Revisited. Dew was one of the testers, and so was Hawkwind. There was also Belial. I think Belial was also a person who did the stuff. He's very good in terms of difficulty, because like I always when I kind of bake difficulty into my maps with like the monsters used or the ammo that's available and the health that's available, I kind of use my skill as like a gauge. Like easy, I should just blow through. Medium should be slightly challenged, and then ultra violence would be like I have to say quite a few times, or I'm not going to make it through this. So But then, like, Belial's like, yeah, I breezed through this. Could you make it harder? I'm like, harder? How could I make it harder? So I'm like, and then people are like, no, it's too hard. I got to make it easy. And I'm like, oh, I got to mm-hmm. kind of balance, you know? So it's always but then, you know, in the end, it's your matters. Word that.
Yeah. You know, balancing for difficulty seems to me to be quite tricky and demands real communication if you're doing a mega one, a map compilation.
Yeah, definitely. Cause, like, because you can get
people are going to have different ultraviolences and different heavy plenties and what have you. But it's also more than that. I mean, because certainly with some of the – I've noticed that with many of the older mega wads – my alarm's going off. where is it? Beep. Stop beeping. there we go. Good. sorry. I've mentioned with some of the older ones that they rather focus on more than just monster can and monster placement. They also do things like moving certain items around certain difficulties. Really intricate things that you probably don't really see enough of these days, which I think Back.Next has done rather well. I was actually going to commit myself to the task of helping in that regard, but I'm too lazy or they've done a good job of it already, I think. So.
The best way I would think you'd have to implement difficulty is that if you could change the gameplay slightly with each difficulty level, then it's like the best. Because as you get, like, you know, if you select the higher difficulties, it should be, you know, more difficult. But if it's just add more monsters or add more or make less ammo or less health, it's boring. Like, when I play on the skill levels. Like, if you go from Hurt Me Plenty to Ultra Violence, you got to throw maybe, like, some monsters strategically placed in places that would make things, like, harder. Like, the best, I guess, the best thing that contributes to, I guess, the gameplay of a map is what the player has to engage, or a happy player is a thinking player, and you all have to create, I guess, priorities for the player to concentrate on or like be mindful of. Like, say there's, like, you go into, like, a room and you have, like, demons on the ground, and then, like, maybe an imp or two or whatever. But then you place, like, one chain gunner that's, like, at, like, a ledge someplace. Mm-hmm. Like, he's probably the biggest threat because he's a hit scanner. He can't dodge very easily. So you have to maybe go after him first, and then, like, maybe the demon second, because you can just run around and avoid them. But that sort of thing. But, like, or if you, like, put a mancubus somewhere, it's like you got a guy that's, like, shooting fireballs at you. But if you put that and maybe, like, a chain gunner in some other place, like, who do you prioritize, you know? And a good part of gameplay is it making the player think or think on their feet as to what threat to hit first.
Right.
And it's not very hard. It's pretty hard to actually set up, and that's where a lot of the testing should be. I mean, there's testing and, oh, if I, you know, push space bar or use on this door, does it open? Yes. That's, like, one part of testing. The other part of testing, and the biggest part of testing, should be whether the map is fun to play or, like, it keeps the player sufficiently engaged. And that's the hardest part. But if you, you know, if you nail that, that's, you know, it means the difference between a terrible map.
Certainly, the monster placement and adjusting difficulty settings is really just as much of an involved art as making the map itself pretty.
Yeah, I mean, I will take an ugly map with amazing gameplay over a very pretty map with hold down shotgun button until everyone's dead.
Right. Yeah.
So
I definitely. Speaking of monster difficulty and placement, I definitely got that impression when playing through map 29, Community Chest 3, which I think everyone knows. Yeah,
I gotta tell you, that's probably my least favorite map out of everything played.
I think it's probably the one which your mate could be the most known for, actually.
Am I? Oh, that's terrible. Because
well. Up to a point, I think, until you release Coffee Break. Maybe that could be trumping it at the moment. But
oh, thank God. Because, like, map 29 is... that was originally going to be map 30. But then I was tipped off to the fact that map 30 had the special rule where monsters can telefrag players. because of, you know, that kind of sin and whatever. It's something hard-coded in the Doom where that map, you could, anything could telefrag anything. And I had a bunch of teleport in monster traps where, like, just a couple of monsters come in. And there was this one part where it was like, oh, I grabbed this key, and then a bunch of demons should, the pinky demon should come in, but they all died. Like, every last one of them come up and, like, blah, blah, died. And then I'm like, hey, there's only one thing to fight. Am I missing something about map 30? And then everyone's like, yeah, that little special thing about it. And I'm like, oh, crap. Well, could I move this to map 29? So I moved that to map 29. But then that's not the reason why I dislike it. The reason why I dislike map 29 so much is because I went in it with the wrong attitude. I went in it with, because I knew map 29 was supposed to be hard, supposed to be long, you know, like most map 29s. Mm. So, but, and I did like a little, I guess, 10 to 15 minute playing a map earlier in that Megawad, map 07. The map 29 was, I went into it being like, I want to see how big I can make this, like how much I could throw at the player. And that was the absolute wrong attitude to go into any kind of, I guess, creative work, especially if it's meant to it's meant for other people to play it. And I guess I got way too indulgent with that map, like in terms of monsters, in terms of detail, in terms of just what to put in it. Like, there are some parts in that map that are very, very clearly inspired, like the side area. I guess it's in like the southwestern part of that map, which is like the stairs, and then there's this little like bookcases area and whatever. And players
actually
just swing through that.
When you mentioned monster positioning, that's what I was thinking of immediately. That particular area.
That is the example of like the most inspired part of that entire map. That's just like
so much like, scorn. Wow.
Yes, it's just
I'm sort of surprised. Yeah.
I am not good at making large maps because I feel like I run out of steam, and I'm like, oh crap, what am I going to put in this area? Oh no. But I'm getting better at it. And the thing I'm working on right now is part of Snakes' Secret Santa.
Oh right.
So yep. I'm involved in that, and I think I maybe dropped one hint somewhere in the forum, but it's definitely a mapper whose style is going to challenge me in that regard.
Good.
That's my hint.
Yeah, that's the question I asked to Jimmy. Don't think I'm quite. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, like, anybody who knows me knows that my Achilles heel is huge maps, and I'm like, well, how do I mitigate the, like, I need to use space, but then how do I still make it, I have to be out of my comfort zone a little, or else I don't grow as a mapper or an artist or something else in any kind of discipline that I would care about. So it's really good in that respect. Like, it take me out of my comfort zone and see what I can do, and I grow.
Right.
But I guess, yeah, getting back to map 29, for people that didn't like it, I apologize. I understand why you didn't like it. It's the most indulgent map that I've made, and it's actually one of my least favorites.
Yeah,
it really.
This has turned into a confessional, though. To me, it seemed like the one example of a very enjoyable slog.
I mean, I guess in the end, it is an enjoyable slog because I'm like, I can't make the switch hunt go from one side of the map to the other. Like, everything still has to be made local, and everything, like, you can't lose the player. Like, if you give the player a goal, that goal has to be, you know, reachable, and you can't give them several goals at once. Like, there's if you're going to that's a major part of a map buying, by the way. Like, you have to kind of tell the player where to go without explicitly telling them. Right. Like, in the beginning, you could like show them a key, and it's like, this is your goal. Like, a pickup like that is that key probably unlocks things. Like, even if you haven't seen the locked door yet, you're going to have to get to that key somehow. Mm-hmm. But if you like show off another key, then it's like, wait, which one do I go first? Like, they get lost. And I try to use the John Romero method, who is a tremendous influence on my mapping, at least very recently. And even back then, with like Dimensions of Time and even my really shitty best whatever.
Best whatever, exclamation mark, yeah.
So it's like I use the John Romero method. There's a locked door. You got to figure out how to get through that because it's an obvious goal. Mm. And like you always see where you can't go first before where you have to go. Okay. Or where it's possible to go, because then, you know, the player makes a little mental checklist of, this is locked, mm-hmm. but once I get this, or I get this, like in games like Metroid, it's like, when I get this ability, maybe I can, that'll help me get through that, maybe I should go back here, and so on and so forth, but you can't overwhelm the player with, like, little goals like that, so they have to create, like, a little mental checklist of, like, okay, this is a locked door, that means I need to find a key, and unless I find that key, I can't get through that door, and, but if you have a key, someplace that becomes an immediate goal, or if you show your immediate goal, and it's all about how to, you know, to direct the player so that they don't get lost. And I think in map 29, it's kind of like it really is a bit of a switch hunt in a bunch of places, but if you keep where the player can go small enough, they don't get lost. And right. I think that was like why people kind of like say it's a huge map, but it's an enjoyable one.
Have you never had the the interest to create a sort of sandbox style open plan, because obviously I can think of some examples in which providing the player with all the objectives at once and then just giving them the opportunity to just scrounge around and then just discover things for themselves, that could have a certain charm.
I kind of played with it briefly with but like in a different way with Gambit, that one map that I made for Plutonia Revisited, map 16.
Oh right, yeah,
that was. But I made the obstacle not like keys at first, but like in the, it's like if you're playing from a pistol start, you have a huge block of guys. There's just chain gunners and like demons, and then if you're playing on ultra violence, spoiler alert, yeah, you got revenant. and then it's like, wow, all I'm given is a shotgun and a couple shells. There's no way I'm getting through this without getting the snot beat out of me. So that's like, but like you have to flip that switch that's past them in order to open up another area or make that red key that you see there accessible. But and you could always get that red key and you could always flip that switch, but you have that barrier in front of you of monsters. So it's like, I got to find better firepower. So I try to create that as a deterrent. And like there it's kind of sandboxy, and we got the blue key and the red key. There is like, you know, an obstacle between those two. Like the blue key, you'll eventually come across when you flip the switches in like the eastern area, and you'll come upon it because it's there. But and there's also a blue door there, so you're kind of like blocked off in that area. So it's kind of like what I was toying with. Like, you know, there's only so much differences in like different gameplay you can make with Doom, but like you gotta really rack your brain a little to figure out like something new that the player hasn't like seen yet. And I think that's one of the maps that people like from Plutonia Revisited, because of it's slightly different. Maybe, I mean, like I guess back then when I was, sorry, I'm going on a bunch of different tangents, but like back when I made Dimensions of Time, when I was I guess I was 12 or 13 at the time. I made that like a long time ago. There was I was limited by my resources, like the map editor I used. So I'm like, how do I make, you know, interesting maps or like interesting gameplay? So mm-hmm. that was like another thought.
How many line deaths did you say you were limited to with that editing?
With a deep shareware version, you're limited to 800 line deaths and 1,200 side deaths.
Well, I'm just thinking, because at the end of the Hellbent interview, he was discussing how limitations of that sort was really beneficial to him, and how he preferred maps, which sort of able to be more creative with what they had. Yeah.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Like, I mean, if you if you're given no limits, you can make something that'll get away from you. There is a example that kind of comes to mind that I hesitate to bring up, but I remember Natural 20 made this one map that was this giant oil rig.
Yep.
And it was, and then I remember people saying, you know, it's a problem if you are maxing out the limits of a port that is touted to be limitless.
That was his objective, wasn't it? It was he inquired, "How far can I go, guys?" It's like, "I'm not really sure you want to really stretch that far."
But like, my problem was like, if you do make it that large, you can't make the player lost, because I was lost. Like I when I started playing that map, I was lost. Like, I'm like, where do we go? Mm. Is there a key anywhere? Where are the locked doors? Where the hell am I going? And I'm like, wait, why is this bringing down my i7? So So it's like, it's just, but if you keep it like in like small enough compartments, and then you keep like gradually opening up and opening up the world a bit, then it becomes a lot more manageable. Like, you know, like any video game that does that, you're kind of constrained to a small area until you get power-ups or keys or whatever, and the world gets bigger. And then you know where everything is because you learn and you have landmarks and stuff like that. Mm. And so if you mitigate the frustration of being of having all that stuff open, it's a lot better. But everybody should
not only impose just limits, but
like either on themselves or with whatever they're trying to make.
It's really important to just set goals for yourself, which in turn become your limits
and helps you grow.
I mean, especially we see with certainly. But you know, like we'll see new people come onto the scene. We've seen this time and time again, but new people come into Doom World and they. You know, they make their huge new thread like about all this stuff they're going to do, and they want to make this huge, awesome 60-level megawad, but it doesn't really work out. Yeah, and then everyone laughs. But it's...
and then I laugh.
Mm-hmm.
How many projects has Katamori started that he hadn't finished?
Oh, don't even.
No, but like I mean, you gotta concentrate on one thing and finish it, and then you gotta work on the next thing and the next thing. And it's nice to have ideas, but it's nice to like and if you do branch out, don't announce it, because that kind of like puts it on a list, and then like you have to be held to that list. And then if other
putting your
like,
maps
it's
out there
bad enough
to criticize rather than
to
just
list,
staying in your little
other
bubble.
People
but
have to hold.
I think
you
this
to
is sort of the same thing. Sometimes it is nice to just stay inside that
bubble. You gotta
and
manage.
Treat everything like you're doing it just for yourself, so that so that sometimes that doesn't happen, so that people aren't comparing you to what you have raised their expectations to. If that makes sense.
Well, yeah. I mean, it all depends on, you know, your goal at the end of it. I mean, like, if you're creating mm-hmm. something for you and you decide to share it with the world, it's kind of like you're casting a line out into right. the lake, the Doom community in this case, and you're seeing what people bite. It's like, oh yeah, you know what? That's a pretty cool idea. Or like you're looking for some kind of feedback if you release it. I mean, let's not kid ourselves. It's a means of communication. So if you make something that's like personal, that's for you, but then you release it, and then other people can see it, you're kind of like saying, this is what I think is fun. What about you guys? And then you get feedback right. on that. And if your goal is to make things that are fun, you take that feedback, you learn from it, and then you make something better if that's your goal to entertain others. And taking criticism is always something that I'm learning as I go along, and it helps to divide people up into like groups of criticism. Like, you have the people that just say your crap sucks. You don't listen to those people because that's all they say. Then you have the people that say your crap's amazing. But then they don't expand on that. So they're kind of almost equally worthless. They chuff you up, but they're like equally worthless. Then like you have the people that are like, this is great. I like that you did this, because they kind of give you direction on what you're good at, but they're not as helpful as the people that say you suck, but here's why. And this is the things you need to correct.
And then
when they offer the things that you need to correct, you have to match that with what is my goal. And if it gets me closer to the goal, then take that criticism and you fix up work using it. And if it doesn't reach your goal, then you're free to ignore it. So that's kind of like how I divide up feedback.
The ed game system is only semi-helpful in this regard, then. With its limitations and dialogue, it sort of almost encourages the great exclamation mark 5 out of 5 yeah. slash and so forth.
Yeah, those can be ignored. The great and the crap, mm-hmm. but if it's like, but that's why we have forums. That's why we have discussion forums and people releasing stuff. And they say, "Hey, I'm making this. I need feedback. What do you guys think?" And then the people are like, "Well, I like that you have this switch does this cool little effect or whatever. But what I don't like is like, wow, there's like a billion demons here, and I'm given a shotgun. What gives, man? Like this just draws out the map or something like that." And then you're like, "Okay, maybe that's not fun. Maybe I want people to have fun, so I got to change that." So and so on and so forth.
So I'll attempt another segue here. It's interviewing skill. I'm trying to. It's not really a segue because you mentioned it about 15 minutes ago, but we'll try anyway. Coffee Break Episode 1 consists of several short maps, and I'm wondering if that's sort of born out of your dislike of, or maybe attitude towards, not making large maps.
Absolutely.
Such as 29. Okay, good. Yeah. So maybe one of that, because that says. That says no. You said there's going to be 32 maps initially. Then,
yeah. Then I'm like, you know what? It's taken me long enough. I think I should stop at 11 and then say episode 1 because then it's like I have a completed product and I can continue it if I want to. You know, like having my cake and eating it too.
But it feels bite sized as well. It's nice.
It is. Like yep. it's tiny. It's just a little delicious treat.
That Pez dispenser map.
Yeah. Knock back the head, you get that little sugary thing you put Absolutely. In your mouth, and it's, ooh, strawberry. But, hopefully there aren't too many lemon candies in that little product.
A bittersweet experience. But,
although lemon is a perfect Pez, you know, everybody knocks on lemon.
Something raw, that's kind of, sorry, tangent.
it kind of is, it's half a, It's half a want to get back to like smaller maps or whatever because during that I was still working on there's Community Chest 3 and then after that I kind of did Coffee Break started working on Coffee Break and the name of which is from what I think the guy who made the Doom roguelike Cornel. Zelovich, I think that's how you pronounce his last name. Those Polish names screw with me a little bit, but like, I think that's how you pronounce it. Or it looks like it's Kiselowicz, but it's probably Kiselovich or something. But he coined the term "coffee break roguelike," in which it was like a game that you could play, and you didn't need to learn all the pieces or all the keystrokes or the commands or whatever. Just pick up, play. And like, of course, you could always get better at it as you learn more how to play it. But you're not held to like a giant thing, like say like a roguelike like NetHack, where you have to learn all the commands and one false move will kill you, and that sort of thing. But he coined the term coffee break, and I wanted to make maps that could be completable, I guess, in a coffee break, like 5 minutes, 4 or 5 minutes. You take a little break, you play something. Oh, that was a fun version. Well, back to work, and. But there was the other reason why I made it, which I haven't said, but I guess had a little bit of an influence on it, was there was this MetaWad made by this mapper named Wim Vanry, and he made something called the Mini Level MegaWad, and that was a group of 32 maps. That were like very small maps, like they were almost completable in like a minute or 2 minutes a piece, and like probably 4 minutes at the most. And I was like, that's like a really interesting concept, like little tiny bite-sized maps. And then there was that little voice in the head is like, maybe I could do better, like that kind of, the little slightly competitive bit. But like, I owe like a little bit of that influence or like that proof of concept to him, and that's a little bit of an influence. I don't have, I guess, so many influences maybe in what I make as I do. Like I'm envious of mappers, like and their abilities.
It's good to be covetous. I think.
I wish I could be like them. But I guess the people that do influence me, like John Romero, like at least in terms of his like map layout and like how everything's kind of connected, and he has like outside areas, like how do I get there? And it's like always a nice little bonus if the player figures that out. Mm-hmm. And he's like really good with lighting and stuff like that. There's also it sounds cliche at this point, but Eric Alm is definitely a like he figured out how to make like simple geometry really, really good. And I really, really love his style. Especially like if he doesn't make a huge map, he makes like very small maps. I just really dig his style. There's something like almost retro about it that I really, really like. Mm. And speaking of retro, and these guys were probably the best, one of my best influences, although their style is kind of dated at this point, but I really liked mm-hmm. the mappers Bjorn Hermans and Holger Nathrath. They were, well, they're known for, I guess, Serenity, Eternity, and Infinity, those episodes for Doom. And their style, like with the way they do lights or how they like lay out their maps, there's just something really, really that like just hooked me. I think it was also like the music that they put in their wads. Like there was a lot of piano. For some reason, I thought that fit Doom really well.
I was always a sucker for brass, but that might have just been my playthroughs of Hell Revealed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like oh, like anything that Lee Jackson would write for like
yeah.
like a lot of brass, like jazzy type of soundtrack. Mm. But like, I always thought the piano had a really nice fit in Doom, and I was trying to channel Bjorn Hermans and Holger Nathrath for this really crappy map I made called Bloody Base that you could probably find on the ID Games archive. And
here
it's
it is,
crap.
Yeah, I have it open at the moment. 2 out of 5 stars. A big map, some puzzles, lots of fighting, tons of strategy required.
it's really bad. And it was also like a kind of an homage to their style, mm-hmm. kind of. But it's just I don't know what the hell I was thinking. It's an awfully bad, under detailed map that I made with I think it was Zeth. That was like the ZDoom editor. That was like a fork of Death or whatever. That didn't matter. So they're main influences, but the people I envy probably, well, let's see, Josh Seeley's very good. So is, like any, the like Josh Seeley mm-hmm. and Darkwave, when they made Speed of Doom, I was like, wow, like these guys made something fun and it looks pretty and it's, really nice. And, let's see, other people, SL Fortium, Mike Mancuso is very good at what he does. Mechadon, he's crazy. He's crazy good. And, it's really humbling. Well, I mean, humbling, I don't know if that's the right word, but it's like, you see like these newcoming, up and coming, like new mappers, and they make things that like put your stuff to shame. But then it's like,
yeah, a little
is
bit.
It like, have they been practicing a lot or are the tools better? Which I think. Is quite a bit of influence. Like
I think Tango sheds a tear every single time that happens.
Yeah, I started sixth grade, I think, and I'm
you have you
second
started pretty early, right, Tango?
So yeah, I have been doing this for. Just about half
when you were
my life,
a lot younger,
I guess.
With your Doom career.
Don't have a breakdown now. One
life. Yeah, I'm at
yeah, so
half my life
quite a while
mark,
ago.
I guess, too. Or I was like, whoa, 15, 16 years? I'm 28. Wow, that's more than half. Wow. Oh, I'm old. So,
epiphanies. Yeah.
We're old, no.
It's inevitable.
So, Mechadon's really, really good at what he does.
Maybe not as much
I feel weird
recently
if I
with
leave
the
anybody
release
out.
Of Community Chess 4, but... Until
see,
then, he seemed like a little bit of an underdog to me.
Green
Herring is very good.
Of course, I mentioned
feel like
Eric.
People didn't really know of him that much.
Yeah. There's also Looping's Castman, who I've seen kind of like, mm-hmm. Like really, like, he had like he you could tell that, like, what kind of style of map he wanted to make. And then, like, as he got better and better at using the tools, like, it just got better like each year. So like you go from like Community Chess 3, which was like disarming the mechanism or whatever, and that was like the secret map, and it was like, you know, he had some like amateurish like mapping mistakes and whatever, but like as you get, like, you know, later and later, and you look at his maps, they get, you know, better and better. There's less mistakes, but there's still that consistent theme that he has going with his style, and it's just more and more refined. There's let's see, a bunch of other people. Of course, present company, your maps are very good, Alfonso and Tango.
Duncan. Yeah,
but but, like, yeah, I'm just annoyed, like, the talent that there is, and I'm kind of wondering, with all this talent, how come Freedom isn't better?
Huh.
Like, that's like, I was like, oh, compliments everywhere, slap in the face. like, I guess in terms of Freedom, that was like, it embodies the open source thing, like. It was started in, what, 2004? And it's, like, kind of open to the community. Whoever wanted to contribute could contribute. But that, you know, it's good and bad. Requires a little bit of direction. Like, if you could put together, like, a group of people that probably could make something amazing with that, you know, just, like, kind of like how Back to Saturn X was. Essel said, hey, you want to join this project? And he said that to a bunch of people that were that he considered would be a very good addition.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, whatever criteria. I was astonished when he asked me. I'm like, what, really? Me? Why me? You know? Something like that. And I'm pretty sure we could actually make, like, some, like, a GPL Doom or whatever. Like, still something like a creative, well, GPL or the open source or whatever. But, like, you know, still tightly collaborated. Like, I mean, it goes against, like, the open source, attitude. But in the end, you have something, like, better.
Right.
Essentially. And we have, like, a lot of talent. We have, like, if you go to the Zdoom forum, I mean, there are a lot of people that do striding, and they're pretty good.
Essentially everything, but,
and,
but level designing, yeah, I don't mean that as in, like,
texture artists from other places. I mean, it's possible. Come on, people. Let's make it happen. No. I understand what you mean, because, like, it depends on, like, I mean, the Zdoom as a tool kind of, like, opens up a lot more. Oh, also, Randy Height, like, he's, wow. The fact that he made, like, a pretty extensive Doom port. And, like, I mean, there are other people that help. There's, you know, Grapzal, Christoph Elliker,
yeah,
that's his name. And, Gez. Oh, wow, Gez. He's like a huge contributor to the community, not just in, like, say, programming or criticism or whatever, but he's I see him in every single thread on the Doom World forum. He always contributes, and it's always something very, very useful. And I'm like, wow, this guy, I hope he has, like, you know, plenty of other stuff to do. But he's very, very good. Hats off to Gez. He's very, very good at what he does.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of being a community member, and something I aspire to be, but I'm awfully busy. And
I think he's probably the chief editor of the wiki as well.
I think so. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which is really, really good. Like in the Zdoom forums, you do have, like, a lot of other mappers that don't kind of, you know, they don't. There's not a lot of crossover between, I guess, Zdoom and Doom World. Like, you have who else? I mean, Zazer is in both places, and he's very, very. I envy his work ethic. Like, he's just. Well, I mean, he's kind of like, he has almost all the time in the world. He's like, what, like, maybe 20 years old in college or whatever. So he still has a lot of time. Once you get out of college, you'll start to see that there isn't a lot of. There isn't as much free time as you would hope.
There's a fair bit of midlife crisis talk going on here at the moment, I think.
More quarter life for me. I'm like, you know, late. So, but yeah. Like the people over at Zdoom. Like, there's this one person who I really, really wish they got their level design better, because everything is just so very good.
All right.
And that person mm-hmm. is, and it's probably not who you might expect me to say, but it's a, and it's a she, Little White, aka, her nickname, I guess, is kind of the Queen of Zdoom, or I've heard some people say that, but, like, She made what was it? There's this one WOD called the Star Wars Chibi Rebellion, which was a huge amount of resources, and it was like very Star Wars centric, but the level design just didn't. Like, I mean, it seemed like built to WoW rather than for gameplay, and like I got frustrated. And she made like another project called like Chosen or whatever. It was, like, very Egyptian themed, but like the mapping still needed work, and everything else was like, you know, a very consistent art theme and whatever. But like there was just like that missing piece. And as a mapper, it kills me because it was like, oh, just ask somebody who could tell who you want the things, and like just it's not, you should partner with people. Like know your. Sometimes you should either work on to get better at what you want to get better with, or what your weaknesses are, or find someone else to fill that gap.
Deathmatcher.
I think it was. That's my main frustration. There's so much talent over there, but there's some like little pieces missing. You know, it's like it almost feels like incomplete.
Mm. I think that seems like, to be the consensus for. Whoever it was who released the DTST, the Doom Mega War that was just released a couple of days ago.
Oh, yeah.
Yep. Yes, that was him. Right, the consensus there again is that the level design was a bit shoddy, but otherwise, you know, a pretty ambitious effort. And that seems to me to be a recurring trend for Doom. Yeah, map sets and the like. A heck of a lot of resources, very ambitious. And often quite admirable in that respect. Like, then, you know, you've got things like cutscenes and voice acting, but the level design sometimes not up to snuff.
Yeah, I and that's like, you know, it's what the player's in the level. Like, I mean, how do you skimp on that? How do you, like, I mean, not skimp, choice of words. It's more like, it's like that should be a focus. Like, right. And, like everything should just, everything should just work, I guess, together in one cohesive unit. It's very hard to do that without working on all of the parts. And if you plan on doing it yourself, you better be really, really ridiculously talented, or know where to find a lot of resources and stuff. Like, I think I touched upon this in the there was like a elitism and purism thread in Doomworld, and I chimed in just a little bit, and I think it came off as a little bit snarky or whatever, but. I mean, there are people that are like, well, why are people purists? Is it because of, like, you know, age? They remember, like, with rose-colored glasses what Doom used to be, and, like, now it's, like, a huge influx of people who are, like, you know, see, like, oh, a tool that I can use to make something, like, for example, a furry dating sim. Yeah, that's a good idea. Really good idea, but like you can make it, but who's gonna want it? So I'm just gonna throw that out there. But like you have like it exists. Oh God, does it exist? But like it comes from like there's like this influx of like ambition, like they want ambitious projects, but people need to, you know, they got to get their feet on the ground, they got to make a decent map, and if you can't make a decent map, then you're not going to make a better, bigger, decent map using other resources. And if you can't draw pictures, you can't make textures, and if you can't either like know what musical stuff music is, you can't like make music for it, and you know, if you can't do any of those parts, like just abandon making that total conversion, that sweet total conversion you want to make, because unless you can get people together that will listen to you, it's not going to happen. And I kudos for the people that want to put in the time and the effort, but if it ends up not being good in the end, I mean, where does the blame go? The blame goes to the author, I guess.
One of the really unfortunate instances of this, it was with Arians and Demon Eclipse, of course.
Arians really, really good writer. Yeah. He's really good. He's like a very good, I would say like a good concept artist, very good. Like, I think there's talent there. There's so much good talent there, but I don't think I've ever... I think I've maybe briefly played it. I don't remember what the map quality was like.
Mm-hmm. It was so-so, I think. It was on the better side, if I recall. Although, yeah. I think he probably confessed that he wasn't really top brass in that department. But
I totally would.
Yeah,
because if I were making something new, like he's a name that I would definitely like put on my list of people. It's like I need a spriter or I need some like additional artwork here. He's a name that I would definitely put on a list. I really want to lend my help to a bunch of things, but I guess time's not on my side and that sort of deal. I'm open, especially if people out there who are not put off by my perfectionism or my criticism of other people's work, especially through this episode of Tango TV. You still don't see me as a monster. Yeah, I definitely want to help.
that could be a good place to start winding down, perhaps. Unless there are any other avenues of discussion.
I guess not. Is there like a question that Hellbent posed that was answered?
Well, Hellbent has a big generic list of questions.
Okay, I've got the whole
the sort of well, quick time list.
Yeah, they're not all that generic though. Like some of them, like just have like really good questions. Like, I don't have them in front of me at all. I gotta look those up someplace.
I'm scratching around as we speak.
Yeah.
Okay, let's see.
Excellent.
What does he got?
I remember like there was
how much time do you typically spend pre-planning like before you start laying down
really wanted
an
asked
app editor?
Didn't get asked or something. Yes. I mean, there's bound to be. There's a lot of questions there.
Yeah.
So this is good radio. Dead silence.
This is, yeah. Yeah.
Yes.
Good. No, that's good. Let's do a quick fire. It's going to be excellent.
No, lightning round.
Yes or no questions. Okay.
When I start, it's usually I either have like an idea in my head what I want to have, or like I start like maybe sketching it. Like back then, since like editors weren't really that as great as they were today, I would start drawing out on paper, like as though it would like be in the auto map or whatever. Like I would draw it out, like all the layouts and whatever. And it's like, well, what should go here? But like I would have in my head, a shotgun should go here and maybe imps, I don't know. But like a whole lot of stuff like that. But I'd like kind of draw out what the two-dimensional layout would be and then like start making it. And then I'm like, oh, wait, this is a lot smaller than I thought it was because I don't have a sense of scale. And even when I'm giving stuff like graph paper, it's still a mess up because what's reality is always different from what's in your head, unless you are really, really good at, have really good practice at what the sense of space is in, both places. Mm. So I sometimes sketch out stuff. Nowadays, I just start making, and then if it's not good, scrap, restart. At this point, if it's like, oh, I don't know what I want to do with this, I wonder if I can create another way into it, like connect it with something else. And then it's I don't think about locked doors and where keys go until...
Yeah.
I start having like an idea of where the player should go. Like I kind of map out like what the player should see and what they should fight or what they should collect before they start opening up more parts of the map. And that's kind of like how my work was.
Now here's a question by Hellbent, which could be very interesting in your case, which is with regards to mapper's block. Because I get the impression that you might maybe just sort of punch through it by mapping in any case, or would you hold back until you have something to work with in your head before trying to break through?
Way back when I definitely tried to punch through, and that is very evident in map 29 of Community.
Yeah.
It's like kind of evident there. Mm. Like even like one part of that map was intended to be the beginning until I actually made the beginning in a different place. But like, oh God. Like there are some places where it's like, maybe you ran into something good, and then no, not at all. Like it got bad. So then I know I need, okay, if I'm not inspired, if I don't have an idea, I should just sit back, play maps,
uh-huh.
and hope I don't plagiarize anybody. Like, I just need to just get an idea for like what people put together, and I'm like, okay, that works, but like, what about this type of area? Oh, I see. And then like, I try to, I'm like almost like the Quentin Tarantino of map making, like just take pieces from things and they mush, put them together, and then I'm like, hey, I have something workable, and it's good, and the dialogue's great, and there's great actors, and
my impression of his films.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But
I look good. Yeah.
But and if I don't feel like playing Doom and I'm like, oh, I'm sick of this, then I just either play other games or just, you know, putz around on the internet. Just clear my mind, like move away from it. I'm like that way when I, you know, work at my job. I don't know what
that will
code to write or
then.
How I'm going to get this to work. I'm going for a walk.
Yet.
And then I come back and I'm like, oh, that's what I probably need to do. Or like, oh, that's probably why this doesn't work, you know? So it's just, you know, it's heavily behavioral, I guess.
Definitely. It's not a bad thing.
Step away, or, you know, just see if you can, like, get your memory, like, your brain jogging of ideas or whatever.
This is why I was sort of pressing the point to, a couple of minutes ago.
I tend to go on. I'm very verbose.
To our benefit. It's good.
Yeah. Sorry. Yeah, apologies to people that don't like hearing one person talk for an extended amount of time.
Man, I was tuning into this interview on Tango TV, and there was just too much interview. I just had to turn it off.
Like, I don't know what I got myself into.
I think someone...
Interviews, damn.
Didn't someone propose that idea recently?
Just one final quick question, because I feel this
is
my
general idea
of
it was
point.
That it was just shut
and it
down.
Is actually the end of Hellbent's list. Doom's 20th birthday is coming up in 1 year. Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I think there's a Megwa being put together. Do you think there should be any special event for that? Or should we just say, yay, pop a cork, and then just sit back mm-hmm. and do nothing?
DoomCon. We gotta make it happen.
Right.
Yeah. First of all, where would we hold it? Like, would it be in Germany? Like a whole bunch of people around the world, because, you know, the Doom community is way more international than it is, you know, located, like, localized to countries. I mean, heck, I'm talking to someone from Australia right now, you know? And I know that, those are other two good mappers, Christian Arrow and Paul Corfiatis. Those are very good guys. I think Paul Corfiatis, though, got his inspiration from, like, Dr. Sleep, John Anderson.
That's quite evident. In fact, I think there was a map called As the Doctor Sleeps.
Yes, As the Doctor Sleeps. That was a really good one, too. And I really enjoy, now that I think about it, Paul Corfiatis. He's very, very good. He's very structured. He knows what he's doing and stuff like that. Same thing with Christian Arrow. Like they kind of like had like a very good mesh with Whispers of Satan. Very, very good Megawad. I love that one. But getting back to like that 20th anniversary thing. I have no idea. Like, first of all, where would we hold some kind of convention? How would we organize it? This is like beyond community. Right. Like
has been Tango TV.
How does Quake.com get organized? How does any convention get organized? I think that's too going.
We'll go ahead and do that.
Too
now,
ambitious. We need to do something special. We need to do something like. Even if it manifests itself as like
sorry
a community project.
Length,
I don't know.
Hopefully everyone won't mind.
Listening.
Okay,
okay.
Again, thank you, everyone. Thank you, Alfonso. Thank you, Mr. T. And we'll see everybody next time.
Oh,